Avichai Menachem presents A Tale of Two Souls, an ongoing lecture series on the Tanya by Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Jacobson. This is tape number 29 in the series, entitled The Two Souls Assume Their Combat Positions, recorded live at Avichai Menachem, Brooklyn, New York.
Good morning. Tanya Perek Tess. Page 26, Daf Yud Gimel Amud Beis. The previous chapters of Tanya dealt with the description of man's two souls, two states of consciousness, the divine soul, its faculties and mediums of expression, as well as the natural, vital, animalistic soul with its attributes and instruments of expression. The author, Reb Shneur Zalman of Liadi, the Alter Rebbe, went on to explain the boundaries of Kedusha, of sanctity, of holiness, and of Klippa, that which is antithetical to holiness and sanctity. He explained what is Kedusha and what falls into the category of Kedusha, as well as what is Klippa and what falls into the category of Klippa. Hence, where lay the ambitions of the divine soul, which is a Kedusha Dika soul, where and to what does it gravitate, as well as where lay the ambitions of the vital natural soul, which is from the realm of Klippa, and where does this soul gravitate and to what. Now in this chapter, the Alter Rebbe will deal with the different natures of these two states of consciousness, their location in man's body, and their perpetual struggle. Let's learn insight. Perek Tes, the ninth chapter. V'hine mekayim mishkan nefesh abahamis shemeklipas neigah b'chalish Yisrael. The abode of the animal soul derived from klipas neigah in every Jew who belev is in the heart. The location where the animal soul, the nefesh habahamis, which is derived from the realm of klipas noiga, from the translucent husk and shell of reality, as explained at length in the previous chapters, this soul resides and is most manifest in the heart of the Jew. More specifically, the abode of the animal is b'chalal hasmaili, in the left ventricle, shehu mali dam. For this ventricle of the heart, the left one, is filled with blood, uksiv, and it is written in Parshas Re'ei, in Perek Yud Beis Pasuk Chav Gimel, ki adam hu hanefesh. For the blood is the soul, the blood is the nefesh. The pasuk over there in Parshas Re'ei is conveying the prohibition that a Jew is not allowed to consume blood. So the pasuk says, "Rak chazak, be strong, lebilti achayl hadam, not to eat the blood." Why? Because ki hadam hu anefesh. For the blood is the nefesh, is the soul. This indicates, in other words, that the soul resides in that ventricle filled with blood, which is the left ventricle of the heart. Vilachein. Therefore, since the animal soul dwells, it's manifested, it resides in the heart, therefore, kol ha-taivis, v'hispirus, v'kas, v'daimein heim belev, all lusts, and boasting, and anger, and similar passions, which originate, and which stem from, the character of the animal soul in man, these passions enumerated and similar passions are in the heart, umehalev, and from the heart, hein mispashtos b'chol haguf, they spread throughout the entire body. V'gam oyla l'mayach shebereish, rising also to the mind, which is in the head of man, lachshiv u'lahadir behen, to think and to meditate about them, ul yishakim behen, and to become cunning in them. K'moy sha'adam mekaymei belef, just as the blood has its source where in the heart, umei halev mispashet l'chal heivarim, and from the heart it circulates into every organ, v'gam ayle l'hamayach shabarash, rising also to the brain and the head. So just as this is the case with the physical blood in man's body, that its source is in the heart, and from the heart it circulates into all other organs of the body, including to the brain which is in the head of man's body. Similarly, the soul, the nefesh, which is clothed in this blood, abides in the heart and spreads out from there, from the heart, to pervade one's entire body, including rising to the man's mind, which is in his head. Can I explain how to fit this in with the modern concepts of biology? Especially due to the fact, you say, that we believe the heart is a pump and it's not the seat of emotions. And you're asking that it would seem, in other words, that if someone makes a surgery on his heart, he gets rid of the nefesh ha'bahamas. He has heart surgery, he gets rid of his animalistic soul. I don't think that's the case. Or a hand transplant, if he has a heart transplant, does he get the animalistic soul of his... of that other heart? That's ridiculous. We'll discuss it in a moment. I just want to continue a little further inside, and then we'll get to your questions. So this is concerning the animalistic, vital, natural soul in man. But the abode of the divine soul, who b'meichin shebirash, is in the mind that is in the head, u'misham mispashetas l'chol ha'evar, and from there it extends to all the limbs. The divine soul is essentially connected to man's mind and cognitive faculties, and from there it extends to all the other organs. The gambalev, the divine soul, also extends into the heart, b'chalal hayamani, in the right ventricle, she'ein b'idam, where there is no blood. As it is written in Kehelas and Perek Yud Pasuk Beis, leiv chacham liyaminai, the heart of the wise man is on his right. And the conclusion of that pasuk is leiv ksil ismaili, the heart of the foolish man is on his left, indicating that the heart of the wise man, which is an allusion to the divine soul, which is described as wise, is on the right, versus the heart of the animalistic soul, which is described in Kehelas several chapters before, in Perek Dalet Pasuk Yud Gimel, as an old fool. So the heart of this fool is on the left side. And Alter Rebbe now goes on to explain this point, how the seat of the divine soul is mainly in the mind, and from there it extends to all the other organs, including in the heart. Vihi, this revelation in the heart of the divine soul residing in the brain is avas Hashem kirisve shel havas, is man's fiery love towards Hashem, which is an emotional, fiery experience, which mislaheves belev maskil. This love flares up in the heart of discerning men who utilize their power of seichel, of intellect, hamevinim, who understand, umizbeininim, and reflect, bedaitam asher b'moich, with the power of application which is in their brain, bedvarim hama'irim eshav, they understand, reflect, and apply on matters that arouse this love. So the love which exists in a fiery way towards Hashem and flares up in the heart of the Jew comes as a result and as a consequence of the contemplation, the understanding, and the application of those matters which arouse this love. For example, contemplation of Hashem's greatness. So this understanding causes this love in hearts, man. So this love is one example of the divine soul reaching from the brain into the heart. And he continues with another example. V'chein simchas levav. Similarly, the gladness of the heart, b'tiferes Hashem v'hadargayin, as a result of apprehending the beauty of Hashem and the majesty of His glory, this is also a way where the heart's emotions gives expression to the presence of the divine soul in the brain, because kasher einei hachacham asher bereish, this gladness is aroused when the eyes of the wise man which are in his head, b'maya chachmasi u'binasi, harboring his wisdom and understanding. So when these eyes, mistaklim b'yikara de malka, gaze intently at the glory of the king, b'tif eres gudulasa yadin cheker, and the beauty of his unfathomable greatness, v'ein seiva tachlis, this greatness which is infinite and boundless, kimavur b'makamacher, as explained elsewhere. So when the person gazes intently with his conceptual eyes, meaning his intellectual faculties which are in his mind, when he gazes on this infinite, boundless, and unfathomable greatness of Hashem, the heart rejoices and experiences a profound sense of exaltation, joy, and happiness. So this is, again, where the heart's attributes and experiences result from a contemplation that the divine soul experienced in its mind. V'chein, sha'ar midos k'doshes shebelev. Similarly, the other holy emotions in the heart, hein mechabat shebemoich, they originate from the chachma bina das, from the conceptualization and application in the mind. So the Alter Rebbe gave two examples, the example of love and joy, gladness of the heart. But the same is true, he says, concerning the other holy emotions in the heart, in other words, emotions that are connected not to the identity of the Nefesh HaBahamis, of the animal soul, but to the character of the Nefesh HaLakiz, the divine soul. So these holy emotions in the heart originate, and they stem from the Chabad, from the intellectual experience of the divine soul which is in the mind. Hence, the divine soul dwells, its abode is in the mind of man, and from there it extends to all the other organs of man's body, including into the heart, because it is the mind that gives birth and creates the certain emotional feelings which are connected to the heart. Now let's try to understand what is the Alter Rebbe conveying to us in these few lines in the beginning of the ninth chapter. First of all, the issue that you have brought up, how this is connected to the biological, physiological anatomy of man as we appreciate it and understand it in modern times. Point number one. Point number two, specifically, the Alter Rebbe discusses the difference between the right ventricle and the left ventricle, noting that the left ventricle is filled with blood, The right ventricle is devoid of blood. And again, the question comes to mind, the right ventricle also contains blood. So generally, the system of the blood circulation, without getting into too much details as we understand it today, is when the heart contracts, the left ventricle, the lower part of the left side of the heart, spurts out, it releases blood, it produces blood and releases the blood, which rises into the main largest artery of the body. It's called the aorta. The aorta, in turn, sends the blood to different arteries, and these arteries branch off into many other arteries, and it ultimately reaches all the organs of the body. Then, in a complicated process, through the veins, this blood, which is already filled with waste as it has arrived into all organs of the body, comes back to the right side of the heart. To the chalal hayamani, to the right ventricle. To the right. The left ventricle of the heart produces the blood and sends out the blood to the aorta and ultimately to all the organs through the aorta. After the blood has reached the organs and it's filled with the waste, now it returns through the veins to the right ventricle of the heart, to the chalal hayamani. At this stage, the blood is dark red, it's colored dark red. From the right ventricle, it rises into the lungs, where a waste gas of oxygen, carbon dioxide, is released and imbued within the blood. Now the blood, receiving fresh oxygen from the lung through the right ventricle of the heart, then again it's passed on to the left ventricle, and the process begins once again, where the left ventricle releases and circulates the blood to the aorta and ultimately to all the organs. This whole process, by the way, usually doesn't even take 1 minute. Which means, in other words, that the left ventricle is that element in the biological makeup of man which produces the blood, and whose primary function is to disseminate, to dispatch the blood to all the organs of the body. The right ventricle, when he says the right ventricle lacks blood, apparently, as the different commentators on the Tanya explain, doesn't mean literally that the right ventricle has no blood whatsoever, but rather, essentially, it is not the source of the blood as in the left ventricle. It receives the blood from all the other organs. The other organs send back the blood to the right ventricle, and its function is not the blood per se, to disseminate the blood per se, but rather to imbue the blood with oxygen, with ruach chayim, with the spirit of life, with the ear, the more subtle reality of the oxygen which comes from the lungs. And the Alter Rebbe is telling us here that the animal soul is connected to the left ventricle somehow. And the divine soul is connected to the mind, and it extends the heart in the right ventricle. What is the meaning in this? As mentioned before, a surgery will not... What does it mean? Does it mean literally? Of course not. As you justifiably pointed out very correctly, a surgery will not remove it, and a heart transplant will not transform it. These are not the methods through which one deals with his or her animalistic soul. What the Alter Rebbe is teaching us here is something very profound, significant and important to understand the nature, the character, and the quintessential identity at the core, at the heart of the two states of consciousness, the two souls, the two psyches, the personalities that exist within the Jew. What is the difference between the intellectual process, the intellectual cognitive experience of man, and the emotional experience of man? Or in the terminology of Tanya, between the seichel experience and the midos experience. Seichel is the cognitive, intellectual process of understanding something. Midos is the emotional experience and relationship towards any given reality, whether it's a person, a creature, a thing, a phenomenon, whatever it may be. Seichel, by definition, is supposed to be objective. When you delve in to understand something, to contemplate something, your feelings, your attitudes, your instincts, your impulses about it are totally irrelevant. You are trying to figure out a certain truism, whether you like it, whether you dislike it, whether you love it, whether you despise it. It's totally irrelevant. Your personal agenda, your personal experience plays no role, or should play no role, in a true intellectual cognitive experience and process. Why? The whole idea of seichel is going beyond your prejudices, going beyond your given feelings towards it. It's trying to understand the concept per se, totally disconnected from your feelings or experiences towards it and relative to it. Midos, on the other hand, experiencing emotions towards a given reality, is the other extreme. Over here, your identity is extremely relevant. That is the whole issue. It's how you feel about it. It's how you experience it. It's how you relate to it. It's how the thing is relative to your identity and to your experience. That's why, for example, the pasuk says, "Hasheichad ya'aver." Sheichad, bias, when someone at bribery blinds honest judgment of a judge. What does bribery do? The moment one of the the plaintiff or the defendant gave you under the table several $1,000s, what happened is now the case was relegated from the realm of intellect to the realm of emotions. Because a person needs money and likes money and gravitate towards money, so you immediately gain a liking towards him. So can your judgment be a true, objective, honest judgment? You're not detached anymore. You're attached. You're attached to one side of the issue. In different books of Jewish philosophy, there's an expression, kol gei shaita, which means every arrogant person is foolish. What does it mean, every arrogant person is foolish? It doesn't mean some miraculous reality. If you're arrogant, you'll become foolish. It means the antithesis of wisdom is arrogance. Why? The foundation of wisdom is learning about something new. If you know it already, so you know it. True wisdom means incorporating a new perspective, a new philosophy, a new idea that your mind has not produced yet and that your mind has not incorporated into its system yet. Arrogance is the antithesis to that. True seichel demands from a person the ability to subjugate his own frame of reference, to rise beyond his given parameters, and to listen to something which transcends him, perhaps. That's why when a person sits down by a lecture or by a class, and immediately he's opinionated, after 5 minutes he already has an opinion about where this person is coming from, he can never learn something new. That's the reason why children have sometimes a certain natural wisdom that adults don't have. You see, sometimes children convey a certain wisdom and truth of things that adults don't have, because they don't have that need to immediately be judgmental. Adults immediately have to convey their opinion because our egos are much more inflated. But a child can listen. And the ability to listen is what allows a person to learn. Midos, on the other hand, means something else. What does midos mean? It's not negative, but it's just another reality. Midos means your relationship towards that thing is not an intellectual one. You feel towards it. You feel very positively towards it. You feel very negatively towards it. In yeshivish terminology, we'll put it thus. Both in understanding and in emotions, there are two realities coming together. There is the Gavra and there is the Chafza. The Gavra is the human being who conceives or who experiences, and the Chafza is that object which he understands, which he contemplates, which he figures out, or which his feeling is towards. He loves the concept, he despises it, whatever it may be. And over here is the difference. In Seichel, the Gavra is subservient to the Chafza. In Seichel, you're understanding it. It's not someone else who's understanding it. But you attach yourself. You leave your own parameters and you connect to the object. You want to know one thing. What is this Chafza all about? Nothing else. That's what real Seichel is. So the Gavra, we'll put it this way, becomes a din in the Chafza. The Gavra becomes defined by the Chafza. It abnegates itself. It becomes subservient. It nullifies itself towards the reality of the Chafza. In Middays, it's the other way around. In Middays, there's also a Gavra and a Chafza. There's the human being who has a relationship with this other human being. But over here, the Chafza becomes subservient to the Gavra. Over here, we're not dealing with the object per se as is. We're dealing with the object as it affects you, as you experience it, in whatever way that is. In Middais, it's filtered through your psyche, through your identity, through your character, through your experiences. In Seichel, you try to filter and see yourself. You try to see things through the eyes of that particular Chafza. It's clear before we go further. So now let's continue. Comes the Alter Rebbe here and tells us that the Nefesh HaBahamis, the animalistic soul of man, is connected very much to the heart, to the emotional experience of life. The divine soul is connected to the mind, to the cognitive experience of life. Because that precisely is the difference between the divine soul and the animal soul. Because apparently the question immediately comes to mind, what does the Alter Rebbe mean over here? That the abode of the animal soul is in the heart, and the abode of the divine soul is in the mind. Is it impossible that it should be an intelligent, brilliant human being who his whole life exercised his mind significantly, and nevertheless, he never came in contact with his divine soul? It's very possible. Every time, every intellectual experience is divine. There can be intellectual experiences that are hazardous, that are harmful, that are destructive, that are an antithesis of divinity, holiness, of goodness, of kindness. On the other hand, there could be a Jew who's maybe not so brilliant, and who has powerful, emotional, holy experiences that are connected to the heart. So what is the meaning indeed? When we say that the divine soul is connected to the mind and the animal to the heart, the meaning is that conceptually, the essence of the divine soul is connected to the mind experience, and the essence of the animal soul is connected to the emotional heart experience. What is the difference between these two souls? At the core of the vital natural soul of the animalistic consciousness of man stands one reality. You know what that reality is? I, capital I, with several exclamation points. That is what is at the core, at the heart of this state of consciousness. A sense of self. A sense that I exist, I need to exist, and I want to exist, and I am the center of life. That is the quintessential point at the core of this state of consciousness of man. Hence, all the expressions, all the modes of experiences, all the attributes, faculties, the entire personality of this vital natural soul are imbued with this axiom, with this quintessential sense of I, and ultimately their quest and their ambition is to satisfy, to satiate, to enhance this I. So what is the quest of the animal consciousness in man? It's the quest for self-preservation, for self-enhancement, for self-orientation, for self-fulfillment. That is what is at the heart of it. And this is its natural experience. It doesn't have to be acquired. This doesn't have to be created. This is at the core of the self. The I is at the core that motivates every ambition, instinct, will, experience, faculty, attribute, emotion of the animal. So ultimately, if you strip it from all its layers, it boils down to the center of its personality, to the core of it, to the pinpoint of it, which is the I, the ego. So the I is a given, and everything else follows that given. The divine soul. The divine soul is totally different. The divine soul seeks the truth. The divine soul wants to know what is true in life. What is the truth of reality? The animal soul has already a certain given that's imbued at the depth of its character, and that is that I am the center of life. I am life, and life is I. And everything ultimately evolves around that axis, around that center point. That's the point of the circle. So the whole circumference, the diameter, the radius, everything boils down to the pinpoint of the circle, which is the ego. At the divine soul, what stands at the core of itself? It's yearning to discern and to discover what is true in life. What is the ultimate reality of existence? What is the depth of life? What is true? What is emes? And its quest is to connect to whatever that truth is. And this is precisely the conceptual difference between the seichel experience and the middeis experience. The middeis experience, as mentioned, is what? There is you. And you have certain agendas and perspectives, and you have a certain type of identity. Positive or negative, it's irrelevant. But the middeis is you. There is a character over here. And this thing is judged based on your feelings towards it. So based on your experience, such a thing you love, such a thing you despise. Seichel is never about you. Seichel is the truth of the thing, irrelevant of what you feel, what you experience. In middeis, the thing is being applied to you. The thing is used, so to speak, as an instrument to express your identity. In seichel, you're applying yourself to the object. That's the whole difference between the nefesh habamis and nefesh halakis. The nefesh habamis, all of its experiences, including its intellectual experiences, are a vehicle, are an instrument to satiate, to enhance, to preserve the sense of self which stands at the core of its identity. In the nefesh halakis, it's exactly the other way around. The nefesh halakis strives by its very definition to connect to a truth and to incorporate that truth into every element of its personality and its character. It doesn't begin with a certain given sense of ego. It transcends its own parameters by definition, attempting to connect to what is true in life. And all of its modes of experiences, all its faculties, all its attributes, their quest, ultimate quest, is to connect that truth to its own reality. In light of this, we can understand that a person could be a bright, brilliant genius, employing his brains and his mind constantly, continuously, but nevertheless, it's not real seichel. And another person can be employing his emotions continuously, and it's not really middis. For example, if a certain person has a very clever mind, so they contrive an extraordinary, brilliant scheme how to cheat their partner in business very significantly. This person has a good mind, a Yiddishkeit. He creates a whole dreidel, a brilliant dreidel, how to cheat that guy. And it took him days and weeks and months of working out those mathematical equations to do it. So you say over here is seichel. This is a real projection of seichel. It's not seichel. Why is it not seichel? Very simple. Seichel means understanding something. Seichel means getting to the truth of something. If this person is a seicheldik person, look at the brilliance of this plan that he has contrived. So one second. If he's really seicheldik, who told him? Why doesn't he question his right to cheat? Why doesn't he question his right to cheat someone else in business? So you'll say there's no question. He doesn't have to question that. I need money, and I don't have it, and this person has it in store for me. So the question is, one second, who says that you having the money is more significant than he having the money? That's a given by him. That's a given. The I is at the core of it. So it's a given that I have to have whatever I need. It's a given that it, even if it's at the expense of someone else's, I also need it. So now I bring in my mind into the picture. My mind becomes a vehicle and an instrument to satiate the I, to satiate the ego. It's not really mind. It's not applying myself to a truth. There is already, the ego is well established and defined. The mind is now a tool, a vehicle, a medium to enhance that ego, to define it, to relate to it, to utilize it, to implement it. If he would be really seicheldik, he would go a step further. What is the truth over here? Not what you want. What is the truth? Are you more significant than the other person? Not necessarily. And by the way, since seichel is of this quality, so ultimately it questions its own validity also. If it's really seichel, seichel asks the question, and who says that you are the supreme being, that you, seichel, are the supreme being? It could be there's something beyond you also. It goes further and further. It tries to probe the truth of something. So this is the difference between the Nefesh HaBahamas and the Nefesh HaLukas. The Nefesh HaBahamas is impulsive. The Nefesh HaLukas is reflective. The Nefesh HaBahamas responds to the clock. The Nefesh HaLukas is guided by the compass, internal direction. The Nefesh HaLukas is idealistic. The Nefesh HaBahamas is selfish. The divine soul is transcendental. The animal soul is self-centered. The divine soul is guided by a vision. The animal soul is guided by temptation. The divine soul is guided by destiny, by purpose. There is direction. The animal soul is guided by instant gratification. The divine soul is seicheldik in the sense that it attempts to understand what's true in life, what's correct in life. And since the ultimate truth in life is Hashem, God and godliness, so therefore it strives, its quest is to be nullified within the all-pervading reality of Hashem. Every dynamic of the divine soul gravitates towards its source to connect to the truth of life. The animal soul is not that way. The animal soul is extremely selfish. That is what is at its core. Everything comes as a result of that.